This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 163.
Much of what we've been thinking about when it comes to defining leadership over the years is now changing due to this unprecedented complexity. The kinds of challenges that leaders are facing, in many cases, are first-time ever sorts of situations. There are a few things that we know are really important. The first thing is that leaders in a world that is so complex need to be willing to be wrong, which means they have to be able to check their egos. They can't have too high of a preoccupation with their own self-worth. This is hard though, because from a very young age, we've been taught that being right is good and being wrong is bad. But how could you possibly be right when there's so many first-time ever situations? So really, leaders who are able to ask better questions, take multiple perspectives, and be willing to say, hey, I don't know, is what we need more of. We talk a lot about this idea of going from being know-it-alls to learn-it-alls. So how do leaders really step into that place of curiosity and also instill that same vigor and interest in their teams?
How can you develop leaders that have future-ready skills? Why is HR critical to rethinking leadership in the age of AI? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Over the past 3 years, I've had the privilege of speaking with more than 150 world-class CHROs and HR thought leaders on this podcast. Those conversations have revealed something every HR leader is grappling with. How do we stay ahead, create value, and truly future-proof our organizations? And that's exactly why I created my keynote, Future Proofing HR, creating value by unlocking the capabilities of tomorrow. It's not just a talk, it's a roadmap for transforming HR into a true value creator. I've had the privilege of keynoting HR leadership conferences for Fortune 500 companies, including AbbVie, Corning, Kohler, Nike, and LabCorp, and many more, equipping their teams with practical frameworks to challenge orthodoxies, sharpen influence, and build the capabilities that matter most for the future. If you're planning your next HR conference or leadership event, visit futureofhr.com to learn more, and let's talk about how we can make your next event a real success. And with that, my guest this week is Brian Glaser. Brian is the VP and Chief Learning Officer at Google. And in this role, Brian oversees onboarding, training, leadership development, and talent management for 180,000 Googlers in more than 70 countries. And in 2017, Brian founded the Google School for Leaders, which we'll talk a lot about today. It's the company's first ever enterprise leadership development center of excellence, which has reached over 40,000 leaders to date. And prior to joining Google, Brian has spent his career shaping culture, strategy, and working with leaders to unlock and drive performance. From his early career at JetBlue to founding and building his own successful consulting company, Gotham Culture. Brian believes that culture and leadership are the true engines of lasting transformation. And in our conversation, Brian delves into the thinking behind Google's approach to leadership and how organizations can prepare for the AI era, develop future-ready leaders, and create learning experiences that truly stick. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Brian. Brian, welcome to the Future of HR Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great, JP. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us and being on the podcast. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. Before you joined Google, you actually founded and built a successful consulting company. What was that experience like, and how did that shape your experience, your perspective on HR, business, and leadership?
It turns out that before my consultancy, I was actually working at JetBlue, which was my first job right out of college. It was an amazing ground for learning and growth. I had an opportunity to eventually step in to lead the leadership and organizational development team there. And I learned so much about how to scale culture during rapid growth, learned a lot about entrepreneurialism, about leaders who really practiced what they preached. I loved my job at JetBlue, but I realized that I really wanted to do the work in leadership and organizational development in other places to see what that might be like. So I started my company and I ran that for about 10 years before coming to Google. Boy, was that a ride. I learned so much about what it means to run a business. So how do you work with clients? How do you hire and develop talent? Really, how you run an organization. Had the opportunity to work in so many different geographies and so many different industries, really had a vantage point that I still use today as I think about ways that organizations differ and ways that organizations, in some cases, have a lot in common. So it was a profound experience that I'm really lucky to have had.
That's incredible. Now, someone who has started a business, this is actually my second business, which a lot of people don't know. When I was about 30 years old, I actually started a brand strategy and design company with a business partner who is a creative director from Sesame Street and Warner Brothers. So we did a lot of brand packaging and creative work. I ran that with him for 18 months. Having a business partner is challenging, let's put it that way. I would not do that again. But I learned a ton. I know how much it takes to go out on your own. And you made it sound like it was kind of not easy, but it's easy maybe after 10 years. What was the early couple of years like when you jumped out? Because it's not easy to build the clients, get traction. What was that like for you?
It was really scary. I went from having a pretty nice office at the JetBlue headquarters to working at a Starbucks because we couldn't afford an office at the time. So I remember being on calls early on, trying to figure out if there was an opportunity to match with a potential client. In the background, you'd hear the barista yelling out the next beverage that was ready. And I'm like, oh no, not now, not now. But what ended up happening was that some of my internal clients at JetBlue went out and started to do different things in different organizations. So they picked us up as consultants, and therefore we were able to get movement and get traction. And then one thing led to the other, and we were able to end up working with some incredible companies around the world. In fact, Google became one of our biggest clients, and I spent a lot of time here before joining. I will say it was a risky, scary leap, but I'm really glad I made it.
Yeah. And I think if you kind of underline that, it was the relationships you had, the trust you built, people knew you were good, knew you could deliver, gave you that shot, which I think people have to, frankly, almost every business that ever has been started, someone gave that person a shot to help get the momentum. And it's a little bit like your career too, when someone gives you a big role to join a company or that first big break and see something in you, it's very similar, whether internal or external.
Absolutely. I remember the person at JetBlue who did that for me. I would say if it weren't for him, I certainly wouldn't be here today. I think he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself and took a bet. And I think a lot was riding on it for him because the nature of the work was pretty visible, but trusted that I would somehow figure it out. For that, I am grateful.
Yeah, I think it's really something to think about is that when someone does hire you and makes that call, their reputation's on the line. They're saying, hey, this person, I believe this person will be able to deliver this role. It will be great. That's a little bit like sponsorship. But when you're hiring someone, it's even a bigger bet. I think when it's in a company, it's even like 10 times that because the reputation inside that company is based on the fact that you can deliver or not. So talk about the trust you have to have as an external consultant is just next level. So I'm very grateful when you want to bring me in. I'm sure you were the same way. You don't take that for granted ever, right? Never.
100%. 100%.
Now, after this amazing business where it sounds like it was very successful, 10 years is an amazing run. You decided to go join Google, which who could blame you? I think that's a great exit strategy from a company. But I know you probably get asked this question a lot, like, what's it like to work at Google? So I'm curious, what's the most common question you get asked about working at Google? And what's one question that no one asks but should?
That's a good question. Working at Google is almost like having a front row seat to the future. Oftentimes people are asking me, like, what does the future hold? That could be everything from what's happening in geopolitics to cutting edge tech. I would say closer to home, a lot of people are wondering about the future of the workforce. They're wanting to know what the impact of AI is on learning, on leadership, on life. And of course, because in many ways, this is also new, we're figuring it out as we go. And we have some pretty interesting perspectives on those topics. And those are always fun to share. I would say questions that I don't often get, but I wish I got more of. People tend to ask business questions. They don't tend to ask what I would consider to be more human questions. But at our core, What people might not know is that we serve billions of users around the world. We have 6 products actually that have over 2 billion monthly users. We've got 15 products with 500 million monthly users. I'm really proud of that because those things are changing the lives of people, and they're able to access information, do things they wouldn't be able to do otherwise. I also really love some of our internal initiatives like Google.org and Grow with Google that are helping bring the best of what we do in Google outside into the world. So there's a lot here that people may not know about that's just fun to talk about that we're doing in local communities and society at large.
Now, a hot topic right now that a lot of people have been talking about is building what you mentioned, the future-ready leadership skills, right? What does it mean to be a leader in the future? How do you define that? How are you thinking about that yourself, Brian, and maybe at Google as well?
It's a great question, and one that requires us, I think, to look at the context around us. So for the first time in history, we're seeing this intersection of war, economic dynamics, social unrest. There's a new technological revolution happening called artificial intelligence. So it makes leading really exciting and oftentimes a bit daunting. Much of what we've been thinking about when it comes to defining leadership over the years is now changing due to this unprecedented complexity. The kinds of challenges that leaders are facing, in many cases, are first time ever sorts of situations. There are a few things that we know are really important. The first thing is that leaders in a world that is so complex need to be willing to be wrong, which means they have to be able to check their egos. They can't have too high of a preoccupation with their own self-worth. This is hard, though, because from a very young age, we've been taught that being right is good and being wrong is bad. But how could you possibly be right when there's so many first-time ever situations? So really, leaders who are able to ask better questions, take multiple perspectives, and be willing to say, hey, I don't know, is what we need more of. We talk a lot about this idea of going from being know-it-alls to learn-it-alls. So how do leaders really step into that place of curiosity and also instill that same vigor and interest in their teams?
Yeah, I think we talk about this idea of learn-it-all instead of a know-it-all is so critical. But I'm wondering, do you feel like, because what I see now with really kind of nonlinear, unprecedented times, sort of things are happening that sometimes are incomprehensible, it's happening faster than it's ever happened before. The best leaders are now doing future casting and thinking about different scenarios. Whereas things go really well, this is what happens. If things go really bad, but I think you almost have to have now 5 or 6 scenarios of different things that could play out across these areas. And that's a new skill set for leaders too, because you don't know.
Yeah, it is. The days of coming up with a 3-5 year strategic plan are dead. Really, what we're thinking about is this shift from being focused on strategic planning to scenario planning, to your point. In fact, we launched the Google School for Leaders in 2017. And since then, we've offered a whole variety of courses for our leaders across Google. One course in particular, though, that really hits on this topic is something that we call Leading in Turbulent Times. And it's really about looking at inflection points in history and looking at the future and figuring out what are those upcoming inflection points and how do we prepare certain scenarios so that we're prepared, knowing that we cannot predict any one particular outcome. At Google, we oftentimes talk about this idea of picking a direction versus a destination and taking stock of signals along the way so we can pivot quickly to get more of what we want.
Yeah, I love that direction, not a destination. That's really good advice. And I think HR leaders have a really big role to play here because we can step back and help leaders start to scenario plan, to think about, hey, what is the destination, not the direction? How can we pivot? How should we be thinking about that versus, I think, just executing what we hear from our leaders?
Yes, 100%.
Now, one of the areas of focus for you guys is also to prepare and support Google senior leaders, as you talked about, as they drive and manage these large businesses, really in this unprecedented situation, these turbulent times, as you mentioned. Tell us a little more about how you and the team are helping Google senior leaders to really build these capabilities, these future capabilities that I don't know if anyone's really figured this out. You're building the plane while it's actually happening, Brian. Tell us more about it.
There are a few things that are really exciting that are happening right now. The first is when we think about leadership behavior, we like to talk about this in the context of next practice, not best practice. And that requires us to really take a look outside of Google, really understanding what are the world trends that we're facing? what are the work trends that are coming down the pike? And then what do we need to be thinking about from a leadership perspective, both in terms of the skill sets that people need, but also the mindsets that people need? We know that the best programs don't really stick if we're not reaching people at a deeper level, really understanding their beliefs, their assumptions, their experiences, and how those drive their behaviors as a leader. We are spending a lot of time doing that type of research that really becomes the basis for these next practices that we embed in a lot of our programs. So we offer, like I said, through the Google School for Leaders, a wide variety of offerings, including cohort-based programs where we bring people from across the organization together to solve intractable business and cultural challenges, all the way through to providing coaching to every single one of our managers so that they're able to create high-performing teams. So we've got a lot of people at Google, and we recognize that people have different needs. So we really try to meet them where they are by having a diverse set of offerings that span these different topical areas.
If you think about leadership in general, Brian, like, what do you believe are the future skills leaders need to have, and where do you feel like there's things they need to let go of a little bit as well?
In times of unprecedented ambiguity, the first thing that we need to really understand is the social, emotional, and cognitive aspects of change and how we ourselves are experiencing all the things that we're handling right now, and also how our teams are processing that too. The holes that we are in now, in some cases, as a society, are deeper, and the ropes that we use to pull ourselves out aren't always there. And so people need a different kind of leadership, and it really does require deep empathy, deep understanding, and a lot of compassion, actually. I think the other thing that we need more of is courage. And if you look at the research in the literature, there isn't a ton mentioned about the topic of courage. Now, you can define that in lots of different ways. I think being courageous in these times means staying really grounded. It's easy to get unnerved and to create frenetic energy. But at Google, I oftentimes think about the leaders of this company being the central nervous system. When they're in flow and they remain steady, the system does too. And when that's not the case, people all around the place can feel that. So how do we allow leaders to be authentic and be themselves, show up with their personalities in ways that really are aligned with their values and their character, and also be sure to create the conditions for people around them to stay the course, even when there's a lot of uncertainty?
Yeah, that's really, really, really important. It reminds me of an analogy that I worked for a consulting partner earlier in my career. And he would talk about if you're holding a string at the top of that string, and you wave that swing back and forth, the string is going to fly, move around a lot. But at the top of the string, it doesn't move as much. And that's kind of leadership. They don't feel the impacts as much. But when you have leaders making decisions and it's whiplash back and forth, the organization feels it. It just adds to the stress. It adds to not being able to execute. And so to your point of kind of having a little more of a steady hand in that direction versus the destination is so critical for leaders. It's hard. But that's what leaders need to do, is give people that direction and get there.
One of the ways that we're able to gauge whether the impact that leaders want to have is actually landing is through feedback. So at Google, we're a heavy feedback culture. We're constantly receiving feedback about how our people are experiencing the company, about how our management and leadership behavior is having an impact or not necessarily having an impact on people. And that really gives us the opportunity to hold up the mirror and see if what we're trying to accomplish here is landing in ways that we're intending, and then course correct if not.
That makes sense. Yeah. I love the idea that you guys are giving so much feedback. Now, one area we haven't even touched on, of course, everyone's probably thinking, JP, when are you going to talk about AI with Brian? You're at Google. You are seeing the future. You got Gemini. There's a lot of great, amazing things happening there. But one thing that people may or may not know is that Google is famous for a project called Project Oxygen, which really looked at like what is really uncovering what are really universal leadership skills that help make a really great boss. And this is a really important work. And it's happened a little while ago. And I know you still believe Project Oxygen is valid, but you're starting to rethink that with AI and how AI may augment people leadership skills. Tell us more about what you guys are doing there, what you're seeing, and how AI and leadership may come together.
Yeah, you can't have a conversation with a Googler without talking about AI, JP. So I knew this was coming. The Oxygen attributes, they are still, I think, as relevant today as ever before. In fact, probably more so because those oxygen attributes really reflect our uniquely human skills. What we know is that AI can help us spend more time focused on things like listening more intently, critical thinking, problem solving, practicing deep empathy and compassion. What's interesting, though, is that these skills are oftentimes the ones that are most difficult for us, that will probably be even more important in the AI era, right? Having tough conversations, being comfortable with failure and vulnerability, being radically self-aware. When it comes to those oxygen attributes, I really like to think about AI as an augmenter. So for example, we can use Gemini, right, Google's large language model, to synthesize performance reviews so that we can spend more time focusing on preparing and having the conversation with our teams about how they're actually doing, how they're thriving in their roles or where they can develop, what they want to be doing career-wise. We can engage more deeply in things like listening without the distraction of having to take notes and capture action items, right? AI can do all of that for us. So the skills and the attributes are still relevant. How we demonstrate them changes when you think about AI as an augmenter. And we're working right now to create a really exciting course for all of our Googlers called the AI Amplified Skills Collection, which really talks about the core skills that you need to thrive at Google, but how you really take advantage of AI to be able to do those in new and different ways.
Yeah, it's fascinating, this idea of AI amplifying the best of us. It's really, truly, it really can. It could be a great thought partner. It can help us think about things we haven't thought of or different perspectives. We can have role play with us. But then to your point, it's also can now collect feedback. It can be giving us feedback on how the meeting went. How did I behave? Did I speak too much? Did I ask any questions? Depending on what you're looking for and depending on how we start to train the models to do that. I'm curious, Brian, is there anything you can share that you guys are doing internally with AI that you think is pretty new and different or innovative that people can learn from? That's non-confidential, of course.
On the learning front, we're experimenting with AI coaches. So really trying to understand a little bit more about how people participate in coaching using AI. What we're learning is that oftentimes somebody at Google, for example, who's about to have a difficult conversation can feel even more safe and comfortable with an AI coach practicing those conversations than they can or than they do with a human. Also thinking about how we use AI to personalize learning. That is really key. We know learning is much more sticky when it's personalized and it happens in the flow of work. Typically, organizations think about learning as being episodic, right? It's like a program or a coaching engagement, which are really powerful and really important. But how can we create these ongoing moments where people are constantly learning and receiving input about their development or accessing resources that are valuable to them in the moment? So it's really changing the game in terms of how we think about learning in general. Another interesting facet of this is how much information is available to us. We have a lot of information at our fingertips. So when do we need to be creating content and when do we need to be curating content is a very interesting question that we're contemplating right now. And when you think about it, because there is so much information out there, how do we really become, in some cases, the curators of really helpful information and then catalyze people on their own journeys to find that information in ways that are easy as they continue down their path?
Yeah, I think you hit on two really amazing trends that we can, let's go deeper on. One is personalization. The world, we talked about mass customization probably 20 years ago. These are concepts that have been around for a while. It's just now coming to fruition where I actually see the next 5 years where you'll be able to get a podcast. AI will be able to interrupt the podcast and give you information on Project Oxygen. If you didn't know what that was, you push a button and all of a sudden that podcast becomes personalized to your experience, right? I mean, I think those things can definitely happen and will happen probably. Maybe I'll be an AI avatar, maybe, who knows, right? Our avatars will talk to each other. But the personalization is the first one. And then I think the other one you talk about is curation. So let's think about that in terms of how do you create this learning organization, right? An organization that can learn and adapt in the world that we're talking about. And how has this changed the role of learning development and HR teams?
So we are thinking a lot about how we take the opportunity to really understand the moments that matter most for our Googlers and how we then organize ourselves in HR to be able to meet those moments in ways that are helpful and quite frankly, delightful for our Googler. So that means moving away from what can look like separate verticals where we all are running our own specific COEs to a much more of an integrated product-focused organization where we're able to look at the entire employee lifecycle from beginning to end, thinking about those moments that matter, and then creating really helpful products that help folks throughout the course of their day become more effective. How we then organize ourselves and think about designing what we do really changes quite significantly. For example, when we think about the process of learning and the process of performance management, oftentimes those things are separated. But what would it look like if before a performance conversation, the manager is actually notified of what it is that the Googler they're working with is trying to accomplish developmentally? The manager gets some prompts about what kinds of questions would be most helpful to probe during that conversation. Then after the meeting, both the Googler and the manager receive some really interesting resources or specific actions on what they can do to continue moving forward. And then through quarterly check-ins, see how that's going. It allows us to really think differently about how we are organized and also how we meet our users in the moments that matter the most.
Yeah, a really interesting point. I'm hearing this more and more organizations are thinking this way in HR, that they're like, these are product teams. And I believe that organizations and to be value creators, we have to start innovating like product managers and thinking like product managers. But what I hear you saying too is, okay, instead of being siloed, you're putting together, it's almost like we're more generalists. There's a few specialists in there, but you're generalists in the, hey, we're solving this for the employee experience. And we're trying to think holistically, and we're not thinking about from a total rewards perspective or just an HR business partner perspective or a talent perspective, et cetera. We're coming together to create something new and sort of putting a totally different hat on it. And I don't think anyone's figured this out yet in HR that I've seen, but a lot of people are thinking about it.
I think you're right. I'm not sure if there are any other organizations who have really cracked this one, but I do think this is the direction that we need to go, especially because our workforce, they don't want to have to shop around HR. They just want what they need when they need it. So we can't make them work extra diligently to figure out how to get what they need based on how we're structured and how we do our work. So really simplifying that by understanding their experience and where we can meet them, I think is going to be key.
And I think also AI is going to help empower that, because AI doesn't know silos and boundaries. If you kind of unleash AI in your HRIS system and ask for certain data, it's going to pull data across the organization, right?
And exactly.
And I think as that information becomes more available, the product teams, wherever they're looking at, can use that the right way. It's not that, oh, only this team has this information anymore. It's going to really be democratized. And so I think that's going to have some big implications like you're thinking about as well.
Totally.
Brian, advice for HR leaders who say, well, look, I don't work at Google or Alphabet. I wish I did, but I need to prepare my organization for and my leaders for this AI-driven future. Where would you start? How do you start to build the organization of the future in your mind?
There are two things that I think a lot about when it comes to this. The first is, I think it's really important that organizations and leaders have a vision for AI. Why are we using it? What will it do for us? What will it do for our users? And this story has to go far beyond AI for the purposes of productivity alone. That conversation can actually be quite scary. So really stepping out and asking ourselves, what can this do to unlock our potential so that we can focus on higher order opportunities? What can this do for our customers and our users so that they can be more successful is key. Oftentimes, though, we see organizations get into the story about efficiency and optimization and scale. And yes, those things are really important, but that can't be the only thing. The other thing that we need to be doing is really getting people comfortable with experimentation, right? Using the tools, I think, is the best way to learn. And that happens most effectively through leadership role modeling. How do we have leaders who take stock of what products are out there that might be most helpful for them? And then how do they talk about their successes and also their flops using those tools with their teams? When they do that, their teams are more likely to experiment as well. And then you start to see a lot of traction happening. So really thinking about the vision that the organization and that the leader has for how AI is going to benefit, and also thinking about this idea of experimentation through really powerful storytelling.
I love the idea of experimentation as well. And I wonder, just curious, if people are going to experiment with Google AI tools, which ones are your favorite? Where should they start?
My favorite right now is Notebook LM. It's incredible. So at Google, for example, we used to do a lot of manual work to prepare for new leaders who were onboarding to the company. it took a lot of time and a lot of coordination across many teams to bring on a new senior leader. Now with Notebook LM, we can take all the source documents that we know are critical, we can upload them, and this tool, within a matter of 5 minutes, can synthesize all that information, provide specifics around the company that are needed, talk about the details of the role that the person is going to be stepping into. They can then upload this into a podcast, and they can listen to it on the go in many languages. And it's just so much more powerful. It's so much more efficient. And that becomes a great way then to allow that new person to continue their learning, their onboarding once they get here, versus it being a one-hit wonder. So that's one example. Love Notebook LM if you haven't checked it out.
Yeah, I love Notebook as well. And I also say it's great for research. So if you really have a dense article or there's a research paper you want to understand, Notebook will summarize it in a really great way. I think it's one of the best tools out there for sure. So I love that.
Thank you.
Brian, last question for you. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
I would say reinvention. I think we have an opportunity to recreate how we work, how we lead, how we live in the AI era. And so much of that can be authored by HR. And I would say there's never been a more exciting time to be part of this kind of function. Reinvention.
I love it, Brian. Yeah, you're reinventing work at Google. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. This was a great conversation.
Thanks, JP. It was a pleasure. Really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Brian for joining me to share how Google is building leaders for a complex AI-driven world and designing learning and coaching experiences that actually stick. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoy this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100-plus HR thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest, Paolo Pisano. Paolo is the EVP and CHRO at Booking Holdings, the company behind brands like Booking.com and Priceline. Paolo brings deep global experience across industries from finance to tech to media, and a unique perspective on how HR can drive real business transformation, and he'll share how HR can help leaders and their organizations thrive through change, growth, and complexity. Trust me when I say you will not want to miss this conversation. Thanks again for being part of the Future of HR community.